Yes, it is Groundhog Day, so anyone who wants to make Punxsutawney Phil references in their testimony, that would be welcome. We have only part of our committee here today. The other two, we don't know if they're attending, but we'll start out by a reminder that cell phones do interfere with the recording here. So if you hear buzzing noises, that's probably your cell phone that's interfering, so please turn those off. I'm going to open an organizational meeting of the committee. I'm going to start by having an introduction of our committee staff. Do you want, Lori and Pam, do you want to take just a minute and say hello to the committee and introduce yourselves? We have.
I'll defer to Pam.
Thank you. Welcome back.
And I'm Lori Brocker. I am happy to be back with the chair and all the members of this committee, and also am assisting in House and Senate Judiciary.
If they need.
Thanks. Terrific. Great to have you back, Lori. Welcome back. I was going to congratulate Senator George and his wife Jessica on the birth of their baby, but since he's not here, we will congratulate him anyway and then congratulate him again when he arrives. It's my understanding that he is spending some time with the new baby. So, and then Senator Girard and Senator Rosenbaum, would you please introduce yourself? It's likely that most of the people here know you, but there may be a television audience on the Oregon channel and those listening online. If you want to say who you are and where your district is.
Ladies first. So I'm Senator Diane Rosenbaum, wearing a lovely dark red jacket, and my district is in southeast and northeast Portland and Milwaukee. Very glad to be back serving on this committee and also to be working with Pam again, who is a committee assistant for Senate Commerce and Workforce Development during 2009.
Thank you. Senator Girard?
I'm Senator Fred Girard. I live in the North San Diego Canyon. My district is really fairly large. It involves rural Clackamas, Marion, and Linn County.
Thank you. And I'm Suzanne Bonamici. My district is in Washington and Multnomah counties. It goes all the way out to Jackson School Road in Washington County and down to the Pearl District in Northwest Portland. And it's good to be back. So we're going to start now with the adoption of the committee rules. And I'm going to ask... ask my vice chair, so I'll pass this motion down. You have a copy. And ask for a motion on the committee rules, please.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 2nd, 2010.
Senator Rosenbaum moves to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 2nd, 2010. Is there any discussion? No discussion? Seeing none, Pam will call the roll, please.
Senator Burdick?
Excused?
Senator Girard?
Aye.
Aye.
Vice Chair George.
Excused. Aye. The motion passes and the rules are adopted. I'm going to close the organizational meeting and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1002 and ask Lori to summarize the bill, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1002 increases annuity coverage by the Oregon Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association from $100,000 to $250,000, makes a few technical changes, and it declares an emergency. It's effective on passage. And do we have the revenue impact statement? There is no revenue impact, and there's a minimal fiscal impact, no statement issued. Those documents are before you in the dais.
Thank you so much. And committee, you may recall that we did discuss this issue in one of our interim hearings, and we have with us today Teresa Miller from the Insurance Division. And is anyone else signed up?
No one else.
Yeah, Roger Byer.
And Roger, do you want to come on up too? We're going to make this efficient here today. Teresa, welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Teresa Miller, and I'm the Administrator of the Insurance Division at the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 1002, which, as Lori indicated, proposes to increase the Oregon Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Fund benefit limit for annuities from $100,000 to $250,000. Annuities are complex investment products where an insurance company pays a consumer income at regular intervals in return for premium payments that can either be made in a lump sum or over a period of time. The payments to the consumer can begin either immediately or at some future date, for example, retirement, which is common. Just as bank deposits are protected by the FDIC, money consumers invest in annuities and other insurance products is protected by Oregon's guarantee associations. If an insurance company becomes insolvent, the guarantee associations will collect assessments from insurers to ensure that consumers receive their promised payments. Although sales of annuities and the amount of a typical annuity have grown over time, the coverage limit in Oregon for annuities has not increased since 1991. The current limit is $100,000, which is lower than both the FDIC, which is at $250,000, as well as the level recommended by our national association, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, which has a model law out that recommends $250,000 as well. If you look at some of our nearby states, for example, Washington and Idaho, they also have much higher limits. And with that, Madam Chair, I would urge the committee's passage of the bill and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We'll hear from Mr. Beyer, and then we'll take questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here representing NAFA, which is the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors. My association supports this change in the law. We feel that it is just a good issue that consumers be protected at this level, which is, you know, actually a small level when you talk about annuity plans. So with that, it'll make us very equivalent to our neighboring states. So that's the association and appreciates the department in bringing the issue forward and talking to us about it prior to introduction of the bill so we could have a chance to vet it. So with that, we offer our support.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the committee? No questions. Oh, looks like you got off easy.
That was easy.
Thank you for your testimony. There's no one else signed up to testify about Senate Bill 1002, so I'll close the public hearing. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1002. And Senator George has joined us now. He missed the part where we were congratulating him and his wife on their new baby, Abigail Catherine George. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was watching up in my office. I was putting on my tie before I came down. So, do you want a motion?
Yes. Abigail's father has moved Senate Bill 1002 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Oh, no, you didn't move yet. Go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1002 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator George, Abigail's father, moves Senate Bill 1002 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? No discussion? Seeing none, Pam, will you please call the roll?
Senator Burdick.
Excused.
Senator Blatt.
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Officer George.
Aye.
Senator
Burdick. Aye. Senate Bill 1002 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any volunteers to carry this bill, this committee bill? Not hearing any? Senator Rosenbaum, would you like to carry this bill?
I'd be happy to.
Senator Rosenbaum will carry the bill. Close the work session on Senate Bill 1002. And I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 993 and ask Lori if you will please do a summary of Senate Bill 993 for us.
I'd be happy to. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 993 prescribes regulations for payday and title lenders. It requires payday and title lenders to be licensed to conduct business in Oregon. Gives the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services rulemaking authority over licensee activity, gives the director authority to investigate licensee compliance with license requirements. It sets an allowable rate of interest for payday and title loans. It allows the director to assess civil penalties for violation of provisions. It declares an emergency. It's effective on passage. We do have paperwork. It's before you on the dais. There is no revenue impact, and there is a minimal fiscal impact, but no statement issued. And I just, even after all of that, as you will note in the background, this is essentially similar to current law, but moves the provisions to a separate part of
right.
the statute.
And committee, I mentioned as we opened the hearing that this is Groundhog Day. Now, you may remember that we had this issue before us in the form of an amendment at the end of the 2009 legislative session, but it had come to us toward the end of the session, and there were some questions asked about whether there was time for a thorough review about this issue. And during the interim, I know that Mr. Cosgrove has been working with the Department of Consumer and Business Services on this issue. They've had more time to look at it, and we're going to hear from them about the work that they've done. We have Paul Cosgrove and David Tapman. Do you want to come up together, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Who would like to go first?
It's Mr. Cosgrove's bill, so I'll defer.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. And, Madam Chair, you accurately described the history of this bill. I don't have any groundhog metaphors. I'm sorry. I was thinking of a saying instead in a long, long ago in a far, far away place, because the derivation of this bill is really that the consumer finance statutes in this state, which have existed for years, my association, the Oregon Financial Services Association, and by the way, for the record, Paul Cosgrove representing Oregon Financial Services Association, has been around since the 30s. It's an old industry, and it's been operating in Oregon for a long time. A number of years ago, with the rise of payday and title lenders, our licensing statute became the home for licenses to payday and title lenders. And over these last 8 or 10 years, the statutes and the requirements, both in terms of what kinds of loans and requirements on those loans and all those provisions, sort of got pretty mixed up in Chapter 725. So on behalf of my members, what we had hoped to do is to sort of reconfigure the chapter so that all of the provisions regarding traditional consumer finance licensees are back together, and all the provisions with respect to payday and title lenders are together. And the only thing that this bill does is make that change. There are no substantive changes in the regulation of any of these kinds of lenders. It just cleans up the statutes and reorganizes them so that all the provisions with respect to the different kinds of licensees are together. And that's what we brought at the end of 2009, and as the chair pointed out, there was a question about whether the draft from Legislative Council had made a substantive change, and it was a long, long amendment. The committee deferred action, asked us to work in the interim, and Mr. Tatman and his staff and I have been doing that during the interim, and I think I can say, based on my own personal review and careful, diligent review, that there is no substantive change made to any of the lenders by this recodification. And I think Mr. Tatman is about to tell you that he also agrees from his perspective. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
We'll hear from Mr. Tatman, and then we'll take questions.
Madam Chair, good afternoon. Members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify. I'm David Tatman. I'm the administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. I essentially have provided a brief written testimony. It echoes what Mr. Cosgrove said. We have worked diligently with him. I personally have reviewed this. I've had staff review this. It is a large bill, but it does just what you, Ms. Brocker said and Mr. Cosgrove said. It takes the language in 725 and replicates it for what I call short-term lenders, title and payday lenders. There's some slight differences in the way the two bills look, just because as we go through history, grammar changes and things are renumbered slightly differently. But as far as we can tell, we believe it is the same law, and that's why we were supportive of this change, or supportive of this proposal and this bill. With that, we appreciate the opportunity to work with Mr. Cosgrove, get this thing done, and encourage the passage of the bill.
Madam Chair, I forgot to say a very important thing, which is I also have appreciated Mr. Tatman and his staff and Lou Savage, all of whom have been working hard with us, and we do appreciate their help. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator George.
Thank you. David, this is one area of law that I've always been kind of interested in. Could you explain to me, just because since I've got you here and we're talking about this issue, as I understood, when the payday loan rewrite all happened a session or two ago, when payday lenders pay their fee, that's calculated as part of the interest rate. But like when banks, credit unions, and other financial institutions charge me a fee for extending credit to me, that's considered a fee and not part of the interest rate. Why is there a differential between the way banks and credit unions are viewed versus how payday lenders are viewed, even though the cost to me as a consumer may be the same?
Madam Chair and Senator George, a lot of it has to do with the way the federal government will characterize things. So, for instance, an application fee may not be characterized as part of the cost of the loan, or it may be, depending on how it's structured. We just had a new consumer finance application today, and they made clear that they were going to charge everybody a fee for that application, and so we said that is not factored into the truth in lending application or the calculation of the interest rate cap. So it'll depend on how that's calculated, and I without more, I'd have to give you a specific response to a specific incident. In fact, I know you have a lender here in the audience, and he may be able to elaborate a little bit more, but most of that is driven by the federal law, and that's where we take our cue from. And that's one of the things we look at when we go in and do the examinations, to make sure that that's been accurately represented and incorporated in when somebody's truth in lending analysis has been done. And I think we do a good job of that, so I feel comfortable that the state at least is carrying out that mandate. But the distinction between what the banks and credit unions charge versus the consumer finance or non-depository lenders, some of it may be the way it's just characterized.
Follow up, Madam Chair. Yes, go ahead. I guess here, since we're kind of cleaning up these statutes, I'm trying to, in my view, all of financial institutions ought to be treated the same, meaning they ought to have the same set of rules, and we judge them the same way. And we're passing the payday loan bill through the legislature. I had deposited a check into my business account with a bank, and they had held the check, and three checks I had written came in, and they charged me a charge for each one of those banks, or each one of those checks. They cleared the checks, so they didn't bounce the checks, but they basically loaned me what amounted to about $150 for 24 hours, and they charged me $300 for it. So I calculated the interest rate on that, and it was like 30,000%. So if I would have gone to a payday lender, I would have come out way ahead than going to my bank. And yet what happened is that the bank is under a totally separate set of rules than the payday lenders. Is there a way to merge those two things, since we're talking about clarifying these statutes, so that banks, credit unions, and payday lenders and all financial institutions are on the same? Because as a consumer, it seems kind of ridiculous, because my bank is to charge me a fee, but a payday lender, that's called interest. And I'm trying to, I'd like to see those things merge so they're all under one set of rules.
Madam Chair and Senator George, great point, really valid point. The consumer doesn't understand or see the difference in most of these things. Unfortunately, I think you've seen this played out in the federal government in the last 6 months, where you have got a hodgepodge of different regulation that has grown at different times under the direction of different groups. So you've got federal banking has grown in one direction. You've got consumer protection laws grown in a different direction. And I think that's part of the effort that the federal government's trying to address. Unfortunately, you have this federal overlay, the Federal Reserve Board, and the Office of Comptroller of Currency, who are very zealous in protecting their ability to go in and oversee these and not let anyone else, such as states, have that role. I think the conversation is finally coming around to addressing exactly what you're saying, is that the consumers need something that is consistent across. So whether they go to the pawn shop on the street corner or they go to the largest bank in the world, they have some understanding of how they're going to get treated. Some of that is being addressed in this Consumer Financial Protection Agency proposal. Now, whether that passes or not, certainly beyond my capability to read. But I think those issues are now on board. One of the challenges you face, though, is that you've got federal banking laws, federal credit union laws, federal mortgage laws, and then state versions of that. And that comes about because of the dual chartering process, which I think is a very healthy process and has served the public well. Unfortunately, it just means that things have grown in different periods of time. It would be great to come back together and have almost like a constitutional convention for regulatory stuff. Whether that can happen is maybe comparable to a constitutional convention once in a blue moon.
We'll put that on our committee.
Can I ask one more question? I guess here's what the question is that the ones that we regulate, so state banks, and payday lenders, if we just took those and applied the same rules that apply to, say, federal banks, I mean, what we have is we have state-chartered or state-organized or state-regulated financial institutions under a completely different set of rules, and from a consumer's perspective, it's very confusing. And so we villainize payday lenders, even though their rates, if you take the fees, is actually lower than a bank's rate for the same time a short-term loan. So you have payday lenders being villainized in the media when traditional banks are praised in the media, you know. And I view it as really being damaging to the consumer, because it actually may be more advantageous for them to go to a payday lender and pay a $30 fee than it is for them to bounce a check and pay a $100 fee. And yet it's just how that fee is calculated, whether it's interest or not. And it seems like to me it's like the state would be much better to at least marry up the way we report interest and fees to what the feds do. At least the consumers in our state would have a clear picture of what they're dealing with.
Again, Madam Chair and Senator George, I think that's a fascinating concept. Again, you run into that issue of the dual chartering and the federalism. You've got banks saying we've got to be able to compete with our federal banks, and they'll say, I won't speak for them, but I can anticipate they would have something to say about how they're disadvantaged or they're being treated separately. And so I think you've got so many moving parts, that's why you really need a large sit-down review rather than try and match up one little aspect of payday lending and one aspect of banking in outside of the context of the overall operation. And your concept or your point's well taken. I just don't know that you've got the ability to move that little piece without fixing all the other pieces.
Thank you very much.
Add 2 cents here. That I think that was one of the underlying purposes of the Truth in Lending Act and uniform disclosures for borrowing money, so that everyone would have the same calculation of what constitutes an annual percentage rate. The problem is, I think, with the bank, those are more of a penalty. They aren't a cost of borrowing money. They may feel like it, but that's after the fact. It's not part of the original credit transaction. But you raised some interesting issues.
Thank you.
Other questions? Senator Gerard.
The question I have is with enforcement. And the question is, where is the boundary for DCBS and the Attorney General? Where does the Attorney General come in and where do you leave off?
Madam Chair and Senator Gerard, I think that's an issue that will be coming before this committee or a committee soon, because I know there's a proposed bill to address questions about enforcement of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. Currently, the UTPA, as it's known, the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, does not address lending practices, so enforcement would be under our jurisdiction, if you will. Unless that changes, it will remain under the Department of Consumer and Business Services, because case law has said that lending activity is not subject to the Unlawful Trade Practices Act.
Any follow-up?
Well, Madam Chair, with DCBS, and right now it just seems like there's a tremendous amount of expansion going on with DCBS, and I really have angst about the overlap between that and the Attorney General's office, and I think that's a place that we can have quite a bit of cost savings, for example. But I do think there needs to be clear lines drawn as to where one jurisdiction takes place and one leaves off.
And maybe Mr. Tapman can clarify, this particular bill, Senate Bill 993, doesn't change the current law, which is exclusive enforcement by DCBS. But I think you're referencing a House bill that may change that. But
Okay, Madam Chair, but what happens if you have someone that chronically does not have a license that still practices? What can DCBS do to shut him down?
Madam Chair and Senator George, we have the ability to take action administratively, and we can take action civilly. What we can do is ask a court to enjoin that person, and if they choose to do that, they face contempt charges of that court, which, depending on how the court chooses to enforce that, could result in some jail time to the individual. There is no criminal enforcement of that, and as we've indicated all along, our goal, it's not our goal, Mr. Cosgrove's goal, and we've supported that, was just to move the current law as it reads into this new version.
I don't have a problem with the bill. My problem is where DCBS's powers leave and where the Attorney General's kick in, and that doesn't go just with this, with payday lenders. That's with the institution together. I mean, it really is very confusing to me on a lot of DCBS's enforcement mechanisms, and it just seems like both DCBS and the Attorney General are expanding the scope of both. DCBS is expanding the agency. The Attorney General is expanding their agency, and I just think we get a modeled approach to the middle ground as to who's going to do the enforcement. Do you have trained lawyers that are going to be going before the courts to get your court injunctions?
Madam Chair and Senator Gerard, the Attorney General is the only attorney for the state. We do have trained lawyers, and we work with them, and in many instances we have them appointed to assist the AG office because they've got the expertise.
Madam Chair, if I would just add, Senator Gerard, I think one of the differences is in the case where DCBS, with respect to these lenders, is the sole enforcement authority, if there is a court case, they use the Attorney General like every state agency does, but they control the case. If the Attorney General has his own independent enforcement authority, he controls the case and decides what to prosecute and not. In the cases here, DCBS decides to refer to AG, ask the AG to be their lawyer, just like the client. I mean, DCBS is the client, and the Attorney General is solely the lawyer, not the decision maker. I think that's the distinction that currently exists.
And that would be the model for most state agencies. The insurance division that was just up here, same model.
Understood. Thank you very much for your testimony. We have one other person signed up to testify, Stephen Hampson, please. Welcome. If you'll start with your name for the record, please.
My name is Stephen Hanson, Hanson. I am the president of Oakbrook Financial Corporation, which operates 23 of the 69 surviving small loan licensees in the state. And I'm also representing the Oregon Consumer Financial Services Association. My main reason for coming was to acquaint myself with what the logic of this particular bill is. We see no advantage of splitting short-term lending, which is under 60 days, into a different statute than lenders who loan money to consumers for over 60 days. We don't think that Chapter 725 is confusing at all. We have a separate section within that chapter that clearly defines our regulations. We've been regulated by DCBS since about 1990. We've been licensed since then. I guess our main fear is that by separating us into a separate statute, we risk something similar to what happened with the last revision of the statute in 2007, when severe fee caps were made and resulted in the closure of 300 of the 369 licensees at that time. Shortly after that, DCBS looked at its budget, and all of a sudden it had to support itself with at that time about 100 payday lenders, and it didn't seem to be reducing their staff. And so that whole budget had to be covered by what is now 25% of the number that used to support that budget. And a year and a half ago, DCBS proposed that our licensing fees be raised from about $500 a store to $1,800 a store to cover that deficit. Somehow we were able to reason with them to reduce that to $1,200, which was more than twice what we were used to paying. As Senator George brings out, we're not dealing with a level playing field. We have banks and credit unions effectively providing the same product as we are, and we're limited to $13 per hundred a month, and they have no limit. So our main concern is that by splitting this off, it may increase our costs, because it may increase the cost per licensee to support the DCBS section that oversees us.
Any questions, Mr. Hanson? Senator George.
Mr. Hanson, I want to kind of get into this a little bit, because this differentiating between the different financial institutions is really starting to bother me, because it's hard for the consumer to understand exactly comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges. And the question I asked a few minutes ago was about this issue of, from the consumer's perspective, when they deal with organizations like yours, they're told that the interest rate includes the fee and everything. And the people you compete with, which is banks and credit unions, they don't disclose the interest rate the same way you do, right? Your fees are calculated as part of the interest rate, where banks and credit unions do not. Is that true?
That's correct.
Madam Chair?
Go ahead.
From your perspective, it seems like to me that where we get into danger is that when we continue to separate these things out, in essence what it does is allow certain financial institutions who may have a better reputation in the public eye because of PR to actually charge higher rates simply in a PR move than because we weigh the scales one side or the other. It seems like to me that payday lenders have been villainized, but actually your rates are somewhat reasonable in comparison to credit unions and banks. You agree with me on that?
Yes, absolutely. They were more reasonable in 2007 when our rates were cut by about 75%.
So what I'm trying to get to is, what concerns me about this particular piece of legislation is that we're further separating you guys out, and I kind of get the sense that maybe you perhaps agree with me, that what happens then is that perhaps it allow the regulatory agency or your competitors, in essence, could legislatively target you for additional regulations that then wouldn't apply to the rest of them.
That I agree completely. We were not consulted at all by DCBS or anybody regarding this change that directly affects us. And indeed, we only heard about it a few days ago and haven't really had a time to really delve into it a lot. It looks like the bill simply takes sections of Chapter 725 and puts them into a new chapter. But I've explained, our fears about that. It would be wonderful if credit unions and state-regulated banks were required to have the same license that we are.
Can I ask a question? When you introduced yourself, you said you were here on behalf of the Oregon Consumer Financial Services Association?
Community Financial Services.
Community, okay. Okay. And I do want to point out, just for the record, that this bill was sponsored by Senator Morse, but it was at the request of the Oregon Financial Services Association, which has been working with DCBS. It is not a DCBS bill. So just so that's clear on the record, it's not something that DCBS brought forward. They've been working with the Oregon Financial Services Association.
And it's not something we were consulted on at all in terms of its potential impact on our industry or on our customers.
Any other questions? Other questions? Thank you for your testimony. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 993, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 993. You want to make a motion?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I'd like to address my motion.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 993 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George moves Senate Bill 993 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And would you like to speak to the motion?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I expressed in this whole area of law raises grave concern for me, because I really do believe that the consumers are being totally misinformed on kind of what happens. I do understand Mr. Cosgrove's desire to sort of clean up the statutes, and so I guess I want to keep the bill moving. I may vote no on the floor after I read it a little bit more and get a little bit more in-depth of what Mr. Hansen was saying, because this is exactly what I was concerned about with the legislation that moved through in 2007, is because consumers are not being fully explained exactly comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges, and it's a very nice political environment upon which to raise some of these questions. But if the consumers are actually getting a more raw deal because they can't compare our regulations and the way we compare financial institutions. So I'll vote for the bill to keep it moving to the floor, but at the same time, I may vote no on the floor and raise some of these issues on the floor also.
I appreciate that. So Senator George has made a motion that the bill go to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and we are in discussion. Any other comments? Senator Gerard.
Yes. I would like to kind of say ditto to what Senator George said. I have a few reservations, and actually this is being kind of rushed through as far as, you know, I understand that they had the work sessions and what else, but, you know, sit here in judgment and do it in less than 15 minutes is a little bit tough. So I'll vote yes to move it to the floor. I'm not sure how I'm going to vote, but I really, really have some severe reservation about the expansion of DCBS and, you know, the tentacles that are going out there and the enforcement mechanisms and et cetera. So I would hope that this committee curtail the expansion of DCBS on other further bills.
Thank you for your comment, Senator Gerard, and I'll make a couple of comments as well. Of course, everyone knows that this is a short session. This issue was, however, before us in the 2009 session. We are still the same committee, and over the interim, Mr. Cosgrove has worked with DCBS just to make sure that there were no substantive changes, and they both testified, the Oregon Financial Services Association and DCBS testified that there were no substantive changes. This is simply moving different entities out of the chapter. And I absolutely share Senator George's concern of making sure that consumers get absolutely correct, accurate financial information that allows them to compare fairly any sorts of fees or charges or interest rates or annual percentage rates from any different type of financial institution. To the extent that we can work on those issues at the state level, I'd be more than willing to work with you, Senator George, and committee on those issues. So with that, any other comments? Okay. Pam, will you please call the roll?
Aye.
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 Aye. Did you call Senator Burdick? Excuse me. Okay. All right. All right. The motion passes, and Senate Bill 993 moves to the floor with the due pass recommendation, and I've spoken with Senator Morse, and he will... This is his bill, and he will carry the bill on the floor. So I'm closing the work session on Senate Bill 993. That concludes our business for today. I do want to let everyone know that all of the Senate bills that have been assigned to this committee are now on agendas for Thursday, and next Tuesday, and next Thursday. Those agendas are available to the public. And, of course, we don't know which House bills will be assigned to the committee, which House bills will come over here. But for this, at this point in time, all of the Senate bills that have been assigned to this committee are scheduled for the next three sessions. And with that, I will close the committee for today. Thank you.
So when you're going to draft these...